Hello, and welcome to the Missing Link for SLPs podcast. I'm glad you're here. Today's episode is part of the SLP Spotlight series, where I talk with SLPs in a variety of SLP positions and settings, doing things that we knew SLPs did, but also working in areas that we've never thought or heard of SLPs working in. It is amazing the opportunities these SLPs have taken and where their careers have gone. This is storytelling time. Welcome to this episode of the Missing Link for SLPs podcast. I'm here with Hillary Guest, and when I normally start a podcast, we chat for a little while, and with Hillary, I just wanted to start recording because she has so many neat and wonderful things to say. So welcome, Hillary.
Thank you for having me.
A lot of times when people come on, they're nervous on this podcast, and Hillary has expressed some nervousness, and I developed these podcasts more as just a conversation between two speech paths who enjoy their careers and enjoy where their careers are going. And I wanted to put this little information out at the beginning because this is the way I want our conversations to go. And I'm happy you're here, and I'm glad you're here with us.
Thank you. Yeah, this will be really fun. This is different. I've never done a podcast before.
Well, if I was sitting with you, we'd have a cup of coffee, and this would just be a conversation between two friends who are meeting each other for the first time. So what I would love to ask you is, how did you get started in the field of speech pathology?
Well, growing up, my mom has always been an occupational therapist, and she worked with adults basically her whole career. Anyways, when I was young, I used to kind of accompany her to, like, when she worked in the hospitals, even from a very young age. I remember going to the hospital with my mom. She worked at an old hospital in Ontario, Canada. Oh, I'm from Canada originally. So I used to follow her to work, and she worked with a lot of adults who had strokes or were just coming out of surgery, orthopedic surgery, things like that. And so I guess that was, like, sort of my first initial foray into rehab. And then we later on moved to Florida. And again, I used to accompany my mom to that job as well. She worked in a skilled nursing facility in Naples, Florida. And yeah, it was just, I guess it was cool getting to meet all these different people and whatever. Fast forward to when I was 17, I struggled a bit in high school to kind of find my way and figure out exactly where I wanted to be, you know, trying to figure out what kind of career I wanted. And I don't know. Initially I was like, well, I mean, I do really want to help people. And, you know, my mom's in the medical field, so that would be cool. Oh, hey, what about nursing? And I've always been pretty interested in, like mental health and that type of thing. And even when I initially got my associate's degree at, like, a smaller school before I transferred to a bigger school to get my bachelor's. But as I was doing those general ed courses in my associate's, like, even when I would take those basic psychology classes, I would always want to talk about, like, different things like Alzheimer's or schizophrenia, just things involved with the brain. So then I kind of figured that, well, I'm really interested in the brain. Nursing sounds good. I like science and, like, studying and, like, learning new things. So I thought at that point, maybe I could go into psychiatric nursing. And then being kind of, like, I consider myself, like, an overachiever. I always tried really hard in my classes and really wanted to get some kind of terminal degree. Again, back to my mom, she's a big inspiration for my life, I feel like. I should also mention, like, when I was young, my mom had gone back to school, and when she first graduated with her degree, it was just a bachelor's degree, but it later changed to where OTs were required to get their master's degrees. So I saw my mom at when I was young going back to school and getting that higher degree, and so I was like, I really want to get like a master's degree or maybe even something higher. That was important to me. So then I came to psychiatric nurse practitioner, and then doing that, I went through a certified nursing assistant class when I was about 19. And my intention with that was to do some CNA work while going and getting a nursing degree. So I decided to get my nursing degree from the school I was going to. And like I said, I was kind of working on a nursing assistant course. So I was taking college courses at one campus, and then I was at a secondary vocational campus to do the certified nursing assistant course. And for the certified nursing assistant course, I had to do clinicals. Mm-hmm. And randomly, the place where my mom worked was one of those places where I could do my clinicals. So I picked that. And and then they kind of gave us a choice of, you know, did you want to work in the more general, like orthopedic or like general skilled nursing population? Or did you want to work with like the population that had more like Alzheimer's and more like neurologically impaired? And of course I went with that. So as I was doing that, one of the days that I was kind of observing, I was in a room with a patient, an older woman, who, to be honest, I'm not sure what her diagnosis was, but knowing what I know now, I think she probably had either was really late stage Alzheimer's or possibly had like a locked-in syndrome. But she had no verbal communication. She couldn't talk. She didn't even have like movement in her arms or her hands. She had to be lifted out of bed by this like chair lift type of thing. I'm not even sure what it's called.
Maybe.
What was it?
A Hoyer lift.
Oh yeah, maybe. But I just remember there was a licensed practicing nurse. Anyway, she was helping to feed the patient, and this patient just had so much difficulty like swallowing, and I just felt so bad. She couldn't communicate, and I noticed that she had like modified textures on her plates, and I'm just like, I'd never even thought about modified diet or anything like that before. I was just like, oh my gosh, this is really, really tricky to watch and really hard. And then there was another day where I was in the dining area, and I think it was a different woman this time, but she was having significant difficulty eating and chewing, and she was just like coughing and choking after almost every bite. And it was like heart-wrenching to watch. Some of the other nurses noticed what was going on. And the next day, the speech pathologist was actually brought in to do like just an informal kind of feeding assessment with that woman. Mm-hmm. And it was just really cool. Well, first of all, I didn't even know that speech pathologists could do feeding. And to me, like, you know, I'm here, I'm trying to learn how to be a CNA and like, you know, take care of people. But I just kept getting stuck on the fact, like, she can't eat. This other woman is so, she can't speak. Like, these are such fundamental things and we take it for granted. And so to me, when the speech pathologist came in and did that feeding assessment, to me, she was like a superhero in a way. I'm like, she has the answer. Or so I thought, you know, she knows what to do and she knows what to look for and she can help this person, you know, get some function back in their life and improve their quality of life. And so that's kind of how I got into speech pathology, or got interested in it, I should say.
I wanted to be a superhero.
Yeah, basically.
A lot of SLP superheroes out there.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And you went to school, and you have now started your own private practice.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Tell us about your private practice.
So I launched my private practice at the beginning of this year, so January 2020. And, you know, that was right before COVID hit. And, you know, I was just starting to get things off the ground a little bit with my practice just before COVID. But my practice itself, I work with kids. My focus is basically 0 through 18, so truly pediatrics. And, you know, given my early experiences with the field, being with feeding disorders, swallowing disorders, that's something that I would kind of like to niche down to more in the future. So that's definitely something I'm really interested in. And I also work with a lot of kids right now that have autism, and especially kids who are about 2 or 3 years old, a couple 4 year olds. So pretty much in that early intervention age. So language disorders, kids who have speech delays, things of that nature. That's kind of what I'm doing a lot of right now. And then I do have some experience with literacy disorders as well. So that's something I'd love to get more clients with. It's just kind of tricky with like insurance reimbursement. But yeah, my past experience was I did my clinical fellowship in the schools. Maybe I could also say, like, so I ultimately ended up going to Florida State University, and I got my undergrad in communication science and disorders there, and then got my master's in speech language pathology, graduated from Florida State in 2015. And my husband was going through school at the same time that I did. He graduated just about a semester before I did with his bachelor's, right when I got my master's. Mm-hmm. And we were trying to figure out like where we wanted to be after we were both done. And he actually got offered a job just outside of Detroit. And again, we both grew up in Florida. So to move to Michigan was a really big shift for us. I do have a grandma that lives in Michigan. She's on the West Coast by Lake Michigan. But like the Detroit area, I didn't really have any specific connection to, but that's where my husband landed a job. And I ended up doing my final internship at Cincinnati Children's, which is just a few hours away from Detroit anyway. So we kind of ended up in the Midwest, and then, anyways, graduated. And then I started my career, working in some charter schools in and around Detroit. So I was in kind of some really tricky neighborhoods, and, it was an interesting experience because a lot of the kids that I was working with, not only did they have communication challenges and severe language disorders, but you know, you're kind of working with these kids who are experiencing things that I didn't grow up dealing with, you know, having a child come in and, you know, me as a new grad, I'm like, oh, I just graduated with all this knowledge, evidence-based practice. I'm going to make a difference. And then you know, make this beautiful plan for therapy. And then this child gets to you and they're like, yeah, I heard gunshots last night, or like just like crazy things. And a lot of the kids that I worked with just had so much other stuff going on in their lives that were just, I felt like I was barely scratching the surface. I felt like I wasn't really helping doing therapy with them because they were so stressed out. And
so
what's that?
What did you do then?
How did you? I do? It was a lot of collaboration with social workers at the schools that I worked at. Yeah, I feel like I just kind of had to learn a lot about the importance of stepping back and how important rapport is. And, you know, there, sometimes there's just more important things than working on the R sound, right? Which is, I mean, obvious now, but I don't know. I had all these, I don't know. You come out of school and you're like, yeah, I can save the world. I'm going to be the best SLP ever. But, you know, then you kind of get into reality of it. And, you know, what these kids were facing was challenging, but then also the school's systems themselves, like the schools I was at, they didn't have libraries. They didn't have, any kind of like curriculum that I could tell. So it was just like really, really difficult for so many reasons. And
I don't think we changed the world as SLPs by fixing ours specifically per se, or whatever the disorder is that we're trying to reach. We changed the world by seeing each individual patient as a person, mm-hmm. and seeing how we can help them change their lives. It might be an artic problem, but that artic is how they present themselves to the world in right. helping them in their confidence, whether it's artic or literacy or pragmatics or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I mean, like getting back to the fact that I was so interested in mental health and things like that, it kind of like brought it full circle. You know, you do have to kind of work through some of those things with your students and right. just like see the big picture and things like that. So, yeah. Yeah.
What was one of the factors that influenced you to start your own private practice?
I guess I just felt like that job and other jobs I've had some really cool and interesting experiences, but there's always things about every job that you wish that you could change or, you know, you wish you had more control over. And, you know, it's, I think one of the factors that influenced me is just the fact that I get to structure my days. I get to pick the specific policies or whatever that I'm going to adapt. I get to really control the therapy from point A to point B, and C, D, E, F, G, like all of it. I guess I like being able to know exactly what I'm doing with patients and why, as opposed to when you work for someone else, you kind of have to follow whatever their philosophy is or follow their rules, even if it doesn't always make sense, or maybe it doesn't make sense for that particular family. So I like that I can kind of do that. And I like that I can kind of really, really work with families like very holistically. I just feel like I have a lot more control over.
More and more as speech pathologists, we are being asked to work in a holistic manner. We're not just treating a speech sound disorder or just a feeding disorder. We're often having to address mental health difficulties, parenting difficulties, emotional difficulties. How have you noticed that that's changed over the course of the years you've been practicing?
I don't know that it's necessarily changed. I think my appreciation for paying attention to, especially you mentioned parents' mental health and, you know, obviously counseling is a big part of what we have to do. Right. And I think getting into more of like private practice, I have a little bit more flexibility and time, I feel like, to devote to some of those things. Not that you can't do that in other settings, but it's obviously much more difficult when, you know, if you're in like a school or something like that. Or a different clinic where you're more pressed for time, or, you know, your sessions are back to back to back. I think just as I've gained a little bit more experience, it's less scary to kind of have some of those harder conversations with families, and kind of, I think it's important to check in with parents. I even have to like just every so often remind myself, like, this, you know, what these families are dealing with, like if they've just been told that their child has autism or learning disability or apraxia, these are really, really scary things. I mean, we're so used to working with these types of patients and their types of disorders as clinicians. But I think it's good to sometimes remind ourselves like what the families might be dealing with, and just kind of checking in with them. Because sometimes I do get into sessions and, you know, maybe that day isn't, it's just like a normal day for me, right? But for mom, she's taking the time and she's finally processing like the extent of her child's difficulties and getting overwhelmed by different things. And so just kind of like reminding myself, it's okay to like step back from whatever plan I have that day. Like it's important that we have these conversations with families and just like let them know that we're there and we're listening. And that's just so, so important as a therapist. It's super important.
And that is something that, for those of us who have practiced, that is the part that makes us a good, effective clinician. Not always the data. It's not always the approach or the specific program that we choose to work with, but it's connecting, mm-hmm. teaching, coaching, perspective taking, compassion.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Final question. What words of advice do you have for the speech pathologist who's just beginning her clinical fellowship?
I would say, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid if your first job isn't your forever job. That's completely fine. And most of the students in my class ended up kind of transitioning, even right after their CF. You know, right after my CF, I transitioned to another job. And then the grant funding got cut for that. And then I moved on and I got like my dream job, and I got to work in a pediatric hospital for a little while. And that was amazing, before moving to Texas. But, so I just like, don't be afraid. Don't let anyone doubt you. As a CF, you feel like your whole existence is kind of your whole existence is kind of like hanging over your head, because you have your different supervisors or, you know, your CF supervisor. They're like this really important gatekeeper to the rest of your career. Sometimes relationships are good with supervisors and then sometimes they're not. I would just say it's okay if your CF is really hard. I think, everyone's CF is a little bit different. I had a particularly challenging final internship of grad school, but then my CF, my supervisor was like pretty hands-off and it wasn't as challenging, but different like speech pathologists that I've talked to or student every different classmates that I had different experiences. Sometimes their supervisors were more hands-on. Sometimes they were more helpful than others. And I don't know, just don't let whatever those initial experiences are like define what and who you are going to be as a clinician. Because it's easy to kind of take things to heart. Like if you have a bad experience with your supervisor, it's easy to kind of let that hang over you. And
sounds like good words of wisdom. I am active in some of the Facebook groups, you know, with students and clinical fellows and things like that, mm-hmm. because I like what I produce on this website to be pertinent. And there are clinical fellows out there who are like, this is not going well. This is not what I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. And some of them are like, I'm going to leave the field. And I think mm-hmm. your words of encouragement will help validate that, yep, this is not going like you thought it would. And this is not all rainbow, you know, sunshine that you thought it would be. Mm-hmm. But hang in there, get through this transition, this necessary piece. Mm-hmm. You use the word gatekeeper. Your supervisor is the gatekeeper. I like that. I like that. But also, they're not the end-all, be-all. Supervisors are humans, mm-hmm. and speech pathologists trying to reach out, and the good ones are trying to reach out and help. I know there are supervisors who will take on a student because they don't want to do all of the work, and they'll have the student do all of the work. So for a student or a clinical fellow who is out there and it's not going so well, what would you recommend?
I would recommend finding someone that you can talk to, whether that's like someone from your program or just a friend. I think having someone to vent to is really important. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's what I would say. It's just kind of find your crew. Find or not even a crew. Just find someone that you can talk to that's willing to listen. Even if that's just your mom all the time calling her. it's just so important. I mean, again, going back to the mental health aspect of it, like, I think sometimes that's an area where sometimes supervisors can improve a little bit, is just, even if we understand, okay, yeah, the families that we work with and our patients have mental health challenges and things like that, but I think we have to kind of remind ourselves that that can be our students too, or the, you know, the people that we're mentoring.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think anyone who's trying to be a supervisor, I think that's really, really, really important, mm-hmm. is to understand where our students are coming from. And that's something that I will definitely carry with me in the future. You know, if I have a student that comes on to my practice or mm-hmm. things like that. Yeah.
And they are learning. They are learning. My son, it's his birthday yesterday, and he asked me to come and spend some time with him. And he says, let's go golfing, Mom. Well, I'm not a golfer. I think I've had times in my life, and it involved girlfriends, alcohol, and a golf cart. And we had so much fun. But when my son asked me, I'm like, sure, I'll go. I'll try. I love being outside. And so I got was appropriate clothing for golfing and went out, and you know, I remember they were like, okay, this is how you stand, this is how you hold the club, this is where you look when you're gonna hit the ball. And I did a couple of practice swings and followed through, and then I went to hit the ball, and I hit the ground before it, and then I went right over the top of it and couldn't hit the ball.
Oh no.
And everybody's watching. And there's people behind us, and I'm like, this is, you know, hard. There's so many things to learn and think about. Well, you're picking up this new task. And supervisors, I think, especially for those who have done it a little while, we need to remember that the students and the clinical fellows that we're supervising, they felt like me on the golf course. What do I wear? What do I say? How do I act? How mm-hmm. do I hold the club? What do I do?
Yeah.
And finding a compassionate supervisor, finding a place to vent. ASHA has resources. They have a mentorship program. Find people out there who can and will mentor you and help you through your problems and listen specifically to you.
Yeah, yeah. And I think over the years, I've gotten a little bit more adept at, or I've gotten more comfortable with like looking out for people, maybe asking people questions or looking for further mentorship. Cause I feel like as a student, you kind of have to be, I mean, right. To get into grad school, it's so competitive, and you have to feel like you know all the answers, and it's kind of taken some time to relearn. Like, it's okay. Like, it's not that big of a deal, and it's totally okay to say, like, you know, I don't know this right now, but I'll kind of figure it out. And again, that's kind of one of the reasons why I wanted to go into speech pathology, is because there's so much that you have to be continuing to learn. And you know, that's just what makes us good clinicians, is being able to kind of to figure out the answers or to know where to look.
Right. I was going to say, as a clinical supervisor, it's also helpful when I ask a student, how are you doing? Can I help you with anything? The student then replies to me, yes, I'm feeling uncomfortable here. Can I have some more resources here? How do I do this? How do I do that?
Mm-hmm.
So making those connections.
Yeah. I had a really good, I think she was like the kind of the clinical liaison for Florida State when I was going there. I remember doing a lot of phone calls with her when I was having a hard time at my final internship. Mm-hmm. And she was really, she actually did have a background in counseling prior to being a speech pathologist. So, so she was a really special person. She recently passed away within the last year, but she was really, really, really amazing. So
that triggers another question, or just a comment. When you're a graduate student and you're looking for a graduate program and you're trying to decide between which ones to choose, look closely at the clinical director and the places the students can go to do their internships.
Because
it's important to start launching that. So thank you for your time today. This was wonderful.
Thank you. Hopefully you'll get something useful out of that.
I hope today's conversation has created some aha moments for you and motivated you to become a better SLP, continuing to connect some of those missing links between what you know and how to use that knowledge. Thank you for downloading the Missing Link for SLP's podcast. And if you enjoyed the show, I'd love you to subscribe, rate it, and leave a short review. Also, please share an episode with a friend. Together, we can raise awareness and help more SLPs find and connect those missing links and get the information needed to help them feel confident in their patient care every step of the way. Follow me on Instagram and join the Fresh SLP community on Facebook. Show notes are always available, so come learn more at freshslp.com. Let's make those connections. You got this.